on this program are those of the host and guests, and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesdays. And if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But, of course, until you start calling in, why, we're going to have to simply cover some of the things that I'm concerned about, I think are very interesting. It was just last week that Fidel Castro resigned his position as the premier of Cuba and announced he would not seek to run for office again. It's been actually 49 years since Fidel Castro was brought to power in Cuba by the United States government. Now, most people don't know that. Most people honestly believe that Fidel Castro is the enemy of America. He is a staunch communist, and we are staunchly anti-communist, and of course, he is our enemy, and he hates us, and we hate him, and we've got an embargo, and people can't go down there to visit without breaking government laws. But David Rockefeller's daughter goes down all the time. She's a great friend of Fidel Castro. David Rockefeller's daughter. David Rockefeller, the former vice chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, then for 15 years chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, today honorary chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, the man who paid to organize the Trilateral Commission, a member of the Bilderberger Group. David Rockefeller, who has openly said in his memoirs, where he talks about his daughter being such a good friend of Fidel Castro's and going down to visit him all the time, doesn't mention she's breaking the law, but then when you're a Rockefeller, you're really above the law, aren't you? But he talks about, you know, it's been a lot of the right-wingers have said that I and my family are part of a secret cabal that's plotting to destroy this country and establish a new international order. And if that's the charge, I plead guilty. I am a proud internationalist. Page 405. Of course, Rush Limbaugh's not going to tell you that, because Rush Limbaugh is a good friend of David Rockefeller. In fact, Rush Limbaugh is one of the finest conservatives money could buy. But unfortunately, people don't understand that our reality is actually molded and created by the people who control the media. And freedom of the press really means if you own the press, you have the freedom to distort however you want to, and to withhold whatever information you want to. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call, if you have thoughts on this or any other subject. But people don't understand that it was the United States government that brought Fidel Castro to power. Now, how can I make that statement? Well, first of all, there's a book called The Fourth Floor. It was written by Ambassador Earl T. Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution and before. And in that, he tells you that it was the American government, the State Department, that knowingly brought Fidel Castro to power. But if you'd like to, of course, verify that for your own sake, why, certainly we have a DVD or a video, whichever you prefer. It's called World Revolution. And there you'll see the interview I did with Ambassador Earl T. Smith, a multi-billionaire, back in about 1980. We talked about how we brought Fidel Castro to power. He never won any wars. He never won the revolution. We gave him Cuba, and we've kept him in power ever since then. That's World Revolution. It's available through Radio Liberty. And well, there's so much that people really don't understand about Cuba. And, of course, the tragedy we brought to those people. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're simply talking about how the United States government brought Fidel Castro to power in Cuba. The CIA worked to undermine Batista. You were told how terrible Batista was. He was the president, the democratically elected president. Oh, you didn't know he was democratically elected? You probably thought he was a dictator. Well, that's, of course, what the media wanted you to believe. But the truth of the matter was that Batista was democratically elected. He had been democratically elected in 1956. Now, certainly there had been a coup and that gotten rid of the communists there. But then, of course, in 1956, they held a democratic election, and Fidel Castro, of course, Batista won the election and was elected by the people. Well, then, of course, you have to understand that when there's a revolution going on in your country, many times you have to restrict access to the media, because, of course, the revolutionaries are going to use that to destabilize the society. And you've got to maintain law and order, because the communists are out there doing everything they can, blowing up things and, of course, staging little isolated raids just to create dissension in the society. And so Batista, on several occasions, certainly did restrict the freedom of the press. But you have to understand that the American government was cutting off his access to buy weapons anywhere in the world. He couldn't buy the weapons. He couldn't even get the weapons he'd bought and paid for. And it was very obvious to Batista that the United States government was going to topple his democratically elected regime and put in a communist in power. And he didn't want to see his country go communist. He was a Cuban patriot, and he was really a very brave and courageous man. And of course, there, when the State Department finally decided that they were going to get rid of him, they had Ambassador Smith go to visit Batista and tell him that he would leave Cuba the following day, to order him to leave Cuba the following day. And I guess Batista was smart enough to realize that when you get an order from the United States State Department, it's like getting an order from the mafia. It's an offer that you can't refuse. And so Batista then did leave, and simply there was no government at all, and Fidel Castro was able simply to come in and take over control of Cuba. But you're never going to hear this. Nobody's going to tell you that. You can't let the American people know that we brought the wicked Fidel Castro to power, who then staged a number of show trials and killed somewhere between 12 and 15,000 people. And where is the call for a trial for Fidel Castro for killing all those people? Why? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just pointing out that, Fidel Castro was brought to power by the American government. And, of course, if you want the references on that, there's a report put out by the Senate. It's a report on William Wieland, W-I-E-L-L-A-N-D. And, of course, then the book written by Ambassador Earl T. Smith called The Fourth Floor. But I think, of course, the best source of information on how we brought Fidel Castro to power is in my interview with Ambassador Smith, which you'll see on our video entitled World Revolution. You'll actually see some of it's the uncut film that we actually took of Ambassador Smith back in 1980 when I took a film crew to Palm Beach, Florida to interview this multi-billionaire. But he was very gracious, and we really appreciated his honesty and integrity, trying to let the American people realize that our State Department brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist. Of course, the New York Times at that time, Herbert Matthews, was trying to convince the American people that Fidel Castro was the Abraham Lincoln of the revolution. He was the George Washington of Cuba. And Herbert Matthews and the New York Times did everything they could to convince the American people that Fidel Castro was not a communist. And yet the CIA knew he was a communist. Ambassador Smith knew he was a communist. He had actually gone in 1949, had gone to Bogota, Colombia. At the time there was a communist revolution. He had gone on the radio and said, "This is Fidel Castro from Cuba. This is a communist revolution. And all this was well known by our State Department. That's why they brought him to power. But you must understand it's the same pattern that took place in China a decade earlier, in 1949, when the United States State Department cut off weapons to China, to Chiang Kai-shek, the nationalist Chinese government, did everything they could to undermine the nationalist Chinese because they wanted to bring the communists to power. But you will never hear that in America. You're supposed to think the Chinese communists won the revolution in China, and they didn't. And you need to read what we call the McCarran Committee report, which incidentally we reproduced part of that in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, but we'll provide you with the actual pages from that report dating back, I think, to 1952, going into why did China go communist? It went communist because the United States State Department cut off weapons to Fidel Castro. United States State Department cut off weapons to the nationalist Chinese, so they had nothing to fight with. They'd bought and paid for weapons that were actually on Okinawa, and they weren't allowed to get them. It was the same thing that happened a decade later in 1948, as far as Batista in Cuba was concerned. And then, of course, a decade later, it happened as far as Somoza was concerned. He was democratically elected president of Nicaragua. And, of course, we undermined his government, and we cut off his supply of weapons. And then, of course, the communists took over there, the Sandinista. And then, of course, it was in 1979 that we toppled the Shah of Iran, and we didn't bring the communists to power there. We brought the radical Ayatollahs to power in 1979. They seem to like that number, 49, 59, 69, and then, of course, 99, by me, 1979. So, yeah, but you see, the average American is never allowed to know that. We're supposed to think that the Ayatollahs won the revolution. They didn't win the revolution. We handed Iran over to the Ayatollahs, just as we handed Cuba over to Fidel Castro. And, of course, then he set out and murdered between 12,000 and 15,000 people. And the fact that you never hear that mentioned today simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And, of course, then we stage the phony Bay of Pigs invasion. There was only one place you could invade Cuba where you'd be sure to lose, and that was the Bay of Pigs. How do I know? Because I talked to the man who was in charge of the Pentagon War Room on the day that we set those young idealistic people of the Bay of Pigs to die. They'd been promised air cover. They never intended to give them air cover. They promised to give them supplies. We didn't give them any supplies. But the most significant thing is there was only one place that you could have invaded Cuba where you would be sure to lose. And that was the Bay of Pigs, because it was surrounded by an impenetrable swamp and thickets, and there was no way they could break out from there. And the only way off the beach was past a military camp with 5,000 soldiers there. We sent those men in to die. But it was a no-win war, like Vietnam and Korea and our current wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but we can't let the American people know that. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we've got Dee calling from Spokane. Hi, how you doing, Dee?
Hi there. Not too bad. I just wanted to urge all the listeners, if you have clear skies, go check out the site in the east. Nobody can put on a sky show like the Almighty. You've got a lunar eclipse in tail-down mode in Sirius over above it and Saturn to the left, and it's absolutely beautiful.
All right, fine. Well, we can't see it down here because, of course, we've got too many clouds in the sky, but Dee recommends you go out there and look at the eclipse. Anything else you'd like to say, Dee?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Dr. Stan, about this curious matter of the spy satellite that supposedly has failed in service. Our wonderful technologies and tax dollars at work. And do you have any evidence that it is anything other than it appears to be?
No, I really don't. I think that there's probably a lot more to this than we're being told, but I have no idea what it is, whether we want to test our missiles to see if we can shoot one down, whether we're planning on and preparing to shoot down the missiles, pardon me, the satellites that are up there of the Russians and the Chinese in case of the war that's coming. I really don't know what it is, but you can be sure of one thing, and that they're not telling us the truth. But when we do find out what it's about, we'll sure let you know. Anything else?
Well, I was wondering also why everything that the federal government does costs so much money. The stated cost was something like $40 million. Is that because they have to move the fleet underneath it? I know Bert and Dick Rutan, when they load up their rocket plane with isopropyl alcohol, they get 10 minutes of flight for something like $1,000. And the federal government, I don't understand that the Navy had this capability. Are they trying to advertise something to the world that we hitherto didn't acknowledge?
Well, you have to understand that probably the best anti-missile defense we have today is in our cruisers, and many of our cruisers are armed with certainly with anti-ballistic missiles. So they have the technology to do this sort of thing, and of course, you know, money is of no consequence in the military. The United States spends more money on its military than all the rest of the countries in the world combined. So money is of no consequence.
The other thing that I thought was rather curious is they're talking about the hypergolix, that's the fuel that's on board that spy satellite, as being some sort of an environmental hazard. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but when an airliner has problems with its landing gear or something, they dump fuel into the ocean all the time. They dump hundreds of thousands of gallons of kerosene. And I don't understand what it is about that fuel that makes it so dangerous.
It sounds to me like it's a ruse.
I
think you're absolutely right. I'm glad you're thinking. I think it is a ruse, too, but I don't know what the ruse is all about. One day we'll be able to figure it out, but right now I can't give you any more additional information other than the fact that we know that they're not telling us the truth.
Thank you very much.
God bless, and thanks so very much. Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Dr. Stan. Very good. Thank you. I did see the eclipse beginning at 9 o'clock. It's rather phenomenal.
Okay.
Under a chilly temperature of 10 above.
Okay, fine. Well, I don't envy you there, back there in Michigan. Jack lives. Do you live in Detroit or just outside of Flint?
No, in Flint, actually.
Okay, fine. So go ahead, Jack.
Dr. Stan, you brought up so many burning subject matter near to my heart, and on a cold night like this, all I have to do is tune in and I get fired up.
Okay, well, I'm glad, because you probably need something to keep you good and warm back there in Flint.
Hey, indeed, and you identified the video World Revolution, and then I got to thinking, would that be a perfect companion or complementary to Brotherhood of Darkness?
Well, it's a very important story. Basically, there's a book called... I'm thinking of Fire in the Minds of Men. But Fire in the Minds of Men, written by James H. Millington, the Librarian of Congress, talks about this ongoing world revolution that really began with the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the Italian Revolution, and ended up, of course, with the Russian Revolution and the Cuban Revolution. Oh. There is an ongoing world revolution, but they cannot let the American people understand that this all ties into these powerful spiritual forces. One of the best books we carry is called Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Billington, who really has done a magnificent job. He's a brilliant scholar, except that he totally suppresses any mention of the secret societies working in America. Now, the rest of the book's all about the secret societies in Europe, but he doesn't mention the secret societies in the United States because he belongs to one of them, and that's the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, people say, well, it's not a secret society. You can read the material on the Internet. But when nobody tells you it is a front organization for a concealed secret society, and that was the Round Table, which was a front for the Association of Helpers, which was a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891. And anybody who wants to verify that can read the book by Professor Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor and had taught at Princeton and Harvard and certainly was at Georgetown University when he met Bill Clinton, but certainly one of the most outstanding historians of the last century, acknowledged to be that by most modern-day historians. And in that book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, he tells you about the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations. And, of course, it was, and this is on pages 951 and 952, and, of course, it was a front for the Small American Round Table and for J.P. Morgan interests. So, James H. Billington isn't going to talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, which is our invisible government, and But people are not to understand that. We're to believe that we have a two-party system and we elect our representatives, and we do not. We have a ruling elite who has an agenda, and their goal is a new world order, a new world religion, and to enthrone a new world leader. Hey, you hang on there, Jack. We'll be back in just a moment right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jack, did you have anything else you wanted to say or ask?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Quickly in review, then, in your DVD, whether it be Brotherhood of Darkness or the one World Revolution, right? You did one called War Revolution as well?
Yes, we have all sorts of DVDs. And I know you don't have a computer, but anybody can go up on the Internet and see a lot of our DVDs up there. They're listed, or many of them are actually available
to view. Do you cite these sources that you just mentioned in those videos?
Yes, I always tell you where we got the information, where people can document to see if I'm telling the truth.
Marvelous. And wasn't the CIA, which I call the Central Insurrection Agency, weren't they the ones that conducted... masterminded the Bay of Pigs?
Yes, That's absolutely.
So they set JFK up for failure.
Absolutely, and they sent those men in to die.
Aye, aye, aye.
And, of course, the man who was in charge at that time was Alan Dulles, brother of John Foster Dulles, who had been the Secretary of State under Eisenhower. But both Alan and John Foster had been in Paris with Colonel House, creating the Versailles Treaty, intensely creating a treaty that would ensure there'd be a war in the future, because Germany was to pay reparations, and there was paid so much a year, but they never told them for how long, and they knew eventually there'd be another war there. But both of these people were deeply involved in the occult, and when you understand that, it all makes sense. I'm going to let you go, because I've got a whole board full of people here.
God bless.
God bless. And hey, let's go to Jim calling from New Brunswick. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Oh, fantastic with your program on. I listen to it all the time.
Hey, I'm glad you do.
I listen to it on shortwave.
Okay, great. How's it coming
5835.
Okay.
No, I was listening to you talking about the Council on Foreign Relations, which later became the Trilateral Commission, which became the Bilderbergers.
Right. Well, of course, they all sort of interlock with one another.
they're really dug in quite strong up here in Canada. They've... what they do the same here as they do down there, when they see an up-and-coming politician that looks like he's going to become something, like in the provincial legislature or in the government of Canada, when they see somebody that's been elected once or twice, they grab him, and then they invite him to their meetings. Like our premiers here have all been Bilderbergers. Now, granted, they didn't know what the heck they were doing when they went to these meetings, but they certainly knew what they were doing when they come home. And then what happened is they started to privatize power and hospitals and justice and all these things and social services. And then big, big multinational companies come in and took over. So things that the people used to own from time immemorial, like hydroelectric power, are all owned now by multinationals.
And that is because, of course, the Bilderbergers are the multinationals.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Anyway, I got a frog in my throat. But love your programming, that's all I wanted to say. And we're watching the...
the eclipse?
Yeah.
All right, God bless. Well,
keep up the good work.
We will, and you get all those other people up there in New Brunswick to listen in, will you?
Yeah, I go over and see my cousins over in Maine all the time, in Boston.
Okay, fine.
Thanks.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Chicago, and he's listening on shortwave, too. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just great.
The reason I'm calling, I have a concern, and maybe you might share the same concern, regarding Barack Obama. I have lived in Chicago all my life. And most people that I have talked to, they never heard about Barack Obama until he became senator. He's like he came out of nowhere. And he keeps talking about he did so much in Chicago. There's no articles about what he did in Chicago.
I mean, he's your senator, isn't he?
Yeah, he's my senator. But it seems like, you know, he's like maybe one or two steps away from the White House. He's the creation of the media.
You're absolutely right. And hold up, we'll be right back there, Jim. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Jim calling from Chicago, and he was talking about Barack Obama. And, of course, Jim comes from Chicago, and, Chicago, Illinois, and Obama is the senator from Illinois, and he's only been there for a couple of years as senator, and nobody knows much of anything about him. He has been created by the media to become the next president of the United States. and run certainly right now he's running ahead of Hillary. Now it may be that Hillary and Bill will be able to get these superdelegates to put her in as the Democratic nominee. They really don't care what the American people want. They have their own plan, and whether it's, you know, Hillary or Obama, well, we'll know here before very long. But I think Jim is absolutely right. What do we really know about Obama? Well, he wants change. He's not an insider in Washington, D.C. Believe me, he would not be getting the good media that he's getting today if he weren't in the hands and the hip pocket of the establishment. That's all I can tell you. And I think he's a very dangerous man. I love his smile. I love his wife. But I don't trust him any further than I could throw him.
Dr. Stan?
Yeah?
I have to agree with you 100%. I just don't trust the man. And again, no reporters in Chicago or throughout the nation will, you know, check out his background.
Well, I think, of course, there's a lot of things up on the Internet about him. And WorldNet Daily has certainly published some articles, and I know Joe Farah very well, suggesting that he's been involved in homosexual activity and drug use, and this was in the late 1990s. Not a word in the regular movie, but regular media, but you can get that off of WorldNet Daily, Joseph Farah. And then, of course, there's all the pictures we have of the communist flags in his, Che Guevara and Cuban flags that are in his offices, his local offices of his campaign. But you're not going to read about that in the media.
Right.
And, of course, where is he going to take us? Well, you have to understand the enemy is not communism. The enemy is the establishment that has funded communism since its inception. We're just going to have to watch and wait and see. What a tragedy it was, we had a chance to elect a real American. But unfortunately, if the media ignores you, you can't run a very effective campaign. And you're constantly being attacked, as they have with the number three candidate in the Republican Party. Why, there's just no way you're going to get your message out. And yet, the message of freedom and liberty and the Constitution and bringing our troops home, doing away with the IRS and certainly doing away with the Federal Reserve System, that should resonate with every American. And yet, of course, most Americans are simply sitting back and saying, well, gee, you know, obviously the candidate can't possibly win, so we're going to vote for McCain, because I want to vote for a candidate who can win. And I think John McCain's very dangerous. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He certainly is a liberal, very, very liberal. In fact, he could just as easily be a Democrat as a Republican, and he's going to be the Republican standard bearer, it looks like. We're in real trouble as a nation, Jim, but then God brings his judgment on people, and maybe we're going to get the candidates that we deserve.
Speaking of Senator McCain, there's an article in the New York Times online mentioning that there might be a sex scandal in the making regarding McCain.
Well, of course, maybe there is. I really don't know.
Right.
There's a lot of good things up on the Internet about McCain. And, we're just going to have to wait and see. I mean, a choice between McCain, Obama, and Hillary is like a choice between being shot or being hung or being burned to death. I don't like any of the alternatives.
I agree with you.
God bless and thanks so much for calling. Okay, fine. Let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How you doing? And let me just put our telephone number out again. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Okay, Ray, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the FCC.
Okay.
I understand there's some rule changes going on, and which regarding cross ownership of radio stations, and there was a rule that the long-standing rule of cross ownership has seemed to have been tossed out. Now there's what they want to do, I guess, is consolidate the radio stations and newspapers, have the same people own the newspapers and the radio stations that own the
Now, that, of course, what they want to do is control your access to information. You're absolutely right. They've been doing this for a long time, consolidating the power of the media in a very, very few hands. There's a book called The New Media Monopoly that shows that 90 to 95% of all of the major media in America is controlled by one of five mega corporations. maybe pretty soon it'll just be down to one or two.
Well, this is kind of like the, it's really kind of scary.
There's a lot of things going on that kind of scary.
Yeah, right, yeah. Obama, too. He's pretty scary. I wanted to talk about one other thing.
Okay, hold that thought. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, go right ahead, Ray.
Oh,
what
yeah.
did you want to say?
I wanted to ask you about Operation Paperclip. They had a thing called the Rat Line, it seems to me, where they, what they did was they got the Nazis, you know, the really vicious Nazis out of Germany through this Rat Line.
Right.
And these people, were they working for the U.S. government, or...?
No, they were basically Nazis. It was the CIA and MI6 and certain people within the Catholic Church who actually, organized the Rat Line and helped the Nazis, about 10,000 of them, get into South America. Of course, there were two parts to Operation Paperclip. One, and really characteristically, Operation Paperclip was bringing the Nazi war criminals to America to work, certainly on biological warfare, mind control, and certainly with our space agency. But 10,000 of the most vicious of the Nazi war criminals, people like Martin Bormann and Adolf Eichmann and Klaus Barbie Dr. Mengele, they were all taken to South America with the full help and support of the American CIA. And you see, that doesn't make sense unless you understand that the Nazis were deeply involved in the occult, and so were the leaders of the CIA. And that's, of course, why the CIA and MI6 were helping the Nazis escape to South America, where they lived out their lives. And we knew where they were. I mean, we knew where Klaus Barbie and Eichmann were, but we wouldn't tell the Jews who were hunting for them, and they had to track them down on their own. We helped them to get there. We helped them to get set up. Why would you do something like that? Because you have strong occult forces working within our intelligence agencies, as they have going all the way back to certainly the 1600s, even before we had the CIA. But, of course, at that time, even in Elizabethan England, why are the intelligence agencies of Queen Elizabeth were deeply involved in the occult and with this whole idea of world government. And so Francis Bacon, etc.
So NASA is another kind of occult organization.
Yes, it is.
It's very occult oriented. I believe that they have some kind of ceremony or something.
Well, they had a ceremony. They had a Masonic flag on the moon. And Jack Parsons, who organized NASA, was deeply involved in the occult. He's passed on, gone to his just reward. But Jack Parsons of NASA, who ran NASA for many years, was deeply involved in the occult, as are many of the people there, and that's why I believe so many of the astronauts have seen UFOs. I don't think Christians see them ordinarily, unless they've got some real problem, because these are truly demonic manifestations. Hang on there, Ray. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Ray, I'm going to have to let you go because I got a whole board full of people.
Oh, only one other thing. I'm working on the tapes. There'll be 10 of them.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll look forward to getting them, and you get me the name of the guy, and we'll see if we can get his permission to reproduce them and get them out.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
God bless him. Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Allentown. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Dr. Stan. Yeah, I think it's impossible that McCain will get elected, and I would add, thankfully, I think he's potentially the most dangerous types of politicians, not merely on just these conventional wisdom things you hear trotted out by the fake conservative talk radio, which are all very much true and appertain. But there's another, and I hope folks spread this around. I've been trying to do my damage here on regional talk radio and such. I think this is very very important. Now, of course, the power elite knew full well before they ever boosted McCain that he would never not be elected. I take it you'll agree to that fully.
No, I don't. He might be elected. We'll just have to wait and see. Because
yeah,
if there's a choice
well,
between McCain and Hillary or McCain and Obama,
Yeah.
Well, some of the Republicans may vote for McCain. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see.
And this is very counterintuitive, but at least when the Democrat gets elected, then there's at least nominal Republican opposition to what are essentially the same policies.
Now, I think that is a very good point, and I agree with you totally on that. And it might be the best thing in the world if the Democrat did get elected, then there might be some opposition in Congress instead of, as we see today, all the Republicans dutifully rallying behind our Republican president, supporting war and torture and all these various means by which they're taking away our freedom, listening to our telephone calls, and anybody out there who honestly believes that wanting to tap telephones so they can track the terrorists has got to be incredibly naive. They want to listen to your telephone calls and read your emails and faxes because they're collecting dossiers on every American. We're moving towards a police state. And if you doubt that, you need to see our great new DVD, The Planned Police State. That's The Planned Police State. Anyway, go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, and this is very important, Dr. Stan. And people will hear this and say, yeah, what happened there? Now, you remember when McCain actually was running against Bush like 8 years ago, Bush was like a dead fish, no energy. He wasn't ever out there. He had no lines, nothing. And McCain was cleaning his clock until the very next day after Rust Limpjaw dropped this nearly an elliptical reference to this rumor. Now, you, I expect, know what the rumor is. And so folks can say, yeah, whatever happened. Yeah, that might explain McCain. And this rumor would be the only thing I could think would come even remotely close to explaining otherwise inexplicable positions of McCain over the years, in addition to his, you know, being well hated by the true veterans and POW MIA groups, and flacking for the opening the floodgates of trade with Vietnam. There's a whole bunch of these things that I can't think anything but this rumor that could explain.
Okay, all I can say is that John McCain did everything he could to prevent the other prisoners of war, the men we abandoned in Vietnam, from coming home, and that's unconscionable. I gotta let you go. Thanks
very
much.
Real quick, Stan, real quick. The rumor had it that it was a blackmail, and that was that the Vietnamese... the rumor was that the Vietnamese had some 20 reels of McCain in flagrante delicto with Vietnamese women.
But we don't know if that's true, and I don't want to put it out if we don't. But thanks very much, Roger, and let's go to David, who's calling from Texas. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing fine.
It's strange. I usually listen to Alex Jones, not that I don't enjoy your program, but I only get one or the other. So tonight I'm getting you because of the moon or whatever.
All right, well, I'm glad you are listening.
But I like your show the few times that I've heard it, and I couldn't place your voice, and it clicked. You were on the America's Beginning series, the DVD series.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. And I wanted to point out that other caller, some of those Nazis, if I'm not mistaken, came here to Randolph Air Force Base.
Well, of course, that was the true Operation Paperclip. There were two parts to this. One was Operation Paperclip. The other was the Rat Line. The Rat Line was to South America. Paperclip was here to the United States.
Do you think it's any coincidence that, what was that gentleman that wrote Communion? Was it Whitley Strieber? Had his incident here right down the street, actually, from that base, in the Almos Basin, about that same time? Or do you think that could be at all related? And I'll take the answer off the air. I don't want to take all your time. And the next question is, when they come for the guns, and I think we all know they're going to, do you think there's going to be any chance at all of having some kind of revolution? Or do you think, because it's in the cards as far as prophecy, that this is going to happen and it's going to play out, and we're just merely kind of, you know, chess pieces on the table, so to speak,
I think this is just
going to play out as it's written down? Or do you think this is going to be a battle, precursor battle to, say, looking way down the road to, say, the Battle of Armageddon?
I believe, of course, that God is going to bring his judgment upon this nation because we've turned against him, and the good people in many of our churches have simply given up their obligation to try to maintain a free society. And I believe it is a Christian's obligation to try to preserve this Christian republic that God gave us. And so many of our ministers are preaching Romans 13 without, of course, understanding that this is exactly what they did in Hitler's Germany. This is exactly what our ministers are being told today by the Office of Homeland Security. Preach Romans 13. Keep the people in line. Don't let them get up in arms against what we're doing. Why do you think that they are giving Halliburton $385 million to stand by for 4 years to build concentration camps unless they're planning on putting Americans in them?
Well, God help us, sir. I'll tell them one thing. I'm not going anywhere near a concentration camp, so I suppose that'll have to be the choice I'll have to make at that appointed time.
Well, right now, we are to do our best. We are to get people listening to our programs. We're to get them educated. Alex is doing a great job. But, of course, try to get a few of them to listen to our program, too, will you?
Well, sir, and I like your program, and you're right up there with Alex, sir. I didn't mean anything degrading to you when I said that. I simply can't pick your program up shortwave radio, but...
You can't. We've got a couple of good stations this time of night, for the first hour anyway. If you have shortwave, you can get us on either 5.835 or 7.315. That's 5.835 or 7.315, at least for the first hour.
I've got you on the 5.835 right now, and not to take up any more time, but you should plug those videos that you were participating in, sir, because those were very well done. I know he's trying to release a third one the end of this year. But I just want to say your videos and your show are enjoyable, sir. I'll let you go on another caller.
God bless. Thanks very much. And, of course, the videos he's talking about is The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And we've got Janet from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, how are you doing, Janet?
I'm doing fine. I have been watching this election with more interest than I've ever watched an election before. And I'm seeing that there is a choice of three evils.
Yeah, that really isn't a very, very good choice, is it?
I have a choice of three evils, and which is the least evil of the two, and I'm having a really tough time figuring out who that is.
All right, well, I certainly can't tell you, because I think that they are all evil and wicked people, and that's why they're being run. But you can't understand this unless you understand there is an establishment, and they always, of course, choose the political candidates for us, and then we vote for the candidate of their choice. We've got a great four tape called Secret Societies, and we go into this process. You can follow it back at least until the 1930s, where they've always put people on both the Democrat and the Republican tickets, and that is including Ronald Reagan. So people don't understand that he talked about cutting our taxes, gave us biggest tax increase in history, talked about cutting back on government, gave us the most massive expansion of government we ever had, talked about limiting the power of government and massively expanded it, talked about anti-communism, and yet, of course, financed communism throughout the world. It's a shame he never got an Oscar. He was one of the greatest actors of all time. Anything else, Janet, you wanted to say?
No, if this is, people have not followed elections before, this is a good one to follow.
Well, I think what we have to do is try to utilize this to educate people. That's all we can do. Try to get them to understand that they don't want us to have a choice. They pick the candidates, and then we vote for the candidate of their choice. It's about time we had Americans running for office and Americans electing Americans instead of the internationalists. Certainly all of the people there who are running in key positions for either both Democrat and Republican Party are globalists. They are dedicated to maintaining and continuing this senseless war we're involved in, this no-win war we're involved in over in Iraq. They're all in favor of ever bigger government. None of them are in favor of limiting immigration. They're all in favor of giving the people who are here illegally, give them amnesty, because that's part of the program of destroying America. What they want to do is create a multicultural, multilingual society. And boy, they're sure doing a good job of it.
Getting there quick.
Anything else you want to say?
Nope.
God bless. Thanks,
night, sir.
Thanks so very much. And let's go to Peter, who's calling from Salinas. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. God bless you and all the listeners that call in. It's just amazing to me the passion people have for wanting truth, justice, and the American way. And thank you for bringing that to us on a nightly basis. I'll keep my points real brief. Jay Rockefeller on the Senate Intelligence Committee was the first to want to give immunity to the telecoms for spying on us. And I would also like to point out to our listeners that Rush Limbaugh, a noted drug addict, addicted to painkillers, in his last trip to the Dominican Republic that he claimed to be for a golf trip, was caught with his 200 pecker pills when he came back. So I don't think it was golf that he had in his immoral mind. And, Dr. Stan, I think that the institutions of mendacity that we really need to look at and who comes out of it are Harvard and Yale. At one time, both institutions of learning, but no longer institutions of, again, Satan.
Really, what's so interesting about that, Peter, is both Harvard and Yale were actually created by the church to train ministers to go out and, of course, to preach the Word of God. And the same thing was true with Princeton. And in each instance, why, of course, they were taken over by the forces of darkness. And people don't understand that whenever, of course, the good people, set up an organization to pursue God's agenda and God's rules, why, the people from the satanic side are always there to take it over. And they've done a great job of that through the years.
And my take on Mr. McCain, are, I really think he kind of falls short of blessed be the peacemakers, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven on earth. I don't really...
Well, he's talking about, keeping that war going over there for
100 years
if necessary. And I think that if he becomes the president, why, we'll have a war with Iran. I'm not saying that if Hillary or Obama come, get elected, we won't have a war with Iran. I think that they are all dedicated to pursuing this plan. There really is a plan out there, and that is, of course, to promote a war with Iran and then with the whole Muslim world. That is exactly what's going on today, and that's the significance of the Sybil Edmonds story. Have you read that?
Yes, I have. Absolutely. And one of the original people trying to tell everyone that this was all in the works long before 9/11 ever came around. And they kept her quiet about that.
Yeah, well, of course, to see the real significant thing of what she said is that people at the highest level of our government were actively in allowing the transfer of nuclear technology and nuclear supplies to Pakistan. Now,
yes.
Of course, we're being told, our government wants to prevent the dissemination of nuclear weapons, that we've got to, we've got to stop Iran from having a nuclear weapon, and yet what they did not want Sybil Edmonds to bring out in this country, they put a gag order on her and threatened her with imprisonment if she ever got the information out that the United States government, of course, that would really be the CFR that controls the State Department, was actively involved with the transfer of technology and supplies to Pakistan that was then giving information and supplies to both Iran and to Libya and to North Korea. But we can't let the American people know that. Then they'd understand that our leaders are lying, that they are really actually disseminating nuclear technology throughout the Islamic world, so that when we do go to war with the Islamic world, this will be a nuclear holocaust. And that's what they're really aiming for. And, of course, believe me, it'll not simply be in the Middle East. I fear it's going to be here as well, which is why they're preparing bunkers for the elite here in the United States and for Dick Cheney and George Bush, but no means of protection for the vast majority of the American people. And I believe, of course, God is going to use this to bring his judgment upon our people, tragically.
Dr. Stan, for all of your listeners, it will be AQ Cons, the doorman to hell, to all of those people supporting this absolute demonic regime. Make sure that you tip him well. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless, and thanks so very much. Well, our telephone again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And right now we've got Katie in upstate New York. Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Doing great.
You're up around Utica?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You're hearing us there on that little radio station up there?
Yep, WJIV 101.9.
Great. I'm glad to have you with us. That's the FM station. Good.
Thank you. Good to hear you. I just had a quick question. First of all, where can I find more information about the Halliburton concentration camps? Like what websites or...
All you need to do is go up on the Internet. Do you have a computer?
Yeah.
All right, fine. You go up and you Google in Halliburton $385 million concentration camps, and you'll pull down the articles. If you have difficulty, you give us a call at 1-800-273-8255. 844-8927. We'll send you articles on it from the local newspapers, but I've Googled that and gotten a great deal of information. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, Halliburton. I think I was using Ascend, so I couldn't really find much, I think.
You could, did you try Halliburton, $385 million concentration camps?
No, I think I just typed in Halliburton concentration camps. I didn't come up with much. So.
Well, try the $385 million, and if you don't get it, you call us at 1-800-544-8927, and we have articles in the newspaper that tell you, okay, you know, exactly what's going on. We gave them that money to stand by, not to even build them, just to stand by, be ready to build them for a four-year period. Now, why would we put all that money out? So Halliburton could build concentration camps very rapidly. Why are we refurbishing the old Japanese concentration camps? We've got some great material. In fact, my new talk on the planned police state has the footage from the Iran-Contra hearings back in 1988, where Congressman Jack Brooks is trying to ask Oliver North, who had been working for between 82 and 84 during the Reagan administration, to set up a plan to arrest American citizens and put them in concentration camps. And because it's fascinating, his senator, in a way, keeps interrupting. He doesn't want that information out. The last thing they want is for the American people to know this is the plan. And then we have a clip from Congressman Henry Gonzalez, who's saying, well, the only person who really got close at all was Congressman Jack Brooks, and there really is a plan. In case of a national emergency, to suspend the Constitution and round up Americans and put them in concentration camps. Hey, Katie, you hang on the line. We'll be back here in just a moment. Okay, Katie, do you have any other questions or comments?
Well, the comment I was going to make was I think that the national emergency is going to be the rapture, and that those concentration camps are going to be used during the tribulation to kill Christians.
Well, of course, we're just going to have to wait and see, because if the rapture is supposedly all the Christians going to be swept up, I really don't think that this fits into that scenario. I think that I don't know when the rapture is going to come. It could come 50 years after America's fallen. Nobody knows. But tragically, so many Christians are totally neutralized by their belief in the rapture. So I think that one of my favorite people was Walter Martin. He was the Bible Answer Man. And of course, Walter Martin certainly knows a lot more about the Bible than I ever will. And I heard him one time say, he says, you know, I've studied the Bible all of my life. And I've never found anything in the Bible that really convinced me that the rapture was going to take place. But I pray that I'm wrong. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Exactly.
And I think that, of course, we can't put our faith in the belief that we're going to be whisked out of here. I think we're going to have some very difficult times. And one reason I do what I do, Katie, is because I want to prepare Christians for difficult times, because as it was in Hitler's Germany, so many of the German people honestly believed they were going to be raptured out before anything bad happened. And they were preaching Romans 13 to the German people under the Hitler regime. Certainly the encouragement of Adolf Hitler. That's covered in a book we carry called Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer. That's Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer. But I think our Christians have to be prepared for difficult times so that when they come, they'll not lose their faith. Because I will tell you, World War II destroyed the faith of an awful lot of good German people who were sure that Hitler was the Antichrist and they were going to be whisked away. And I was in Germany after the Second World War. I was stationed there with an infantry battalion in Mainz and Frankfurt. And I will tell you, as far as you could see, some places and cities were rubble in Cologne. Everything was destroyed except for the great church there, great cathedral, and, of course, the General Motors and Ford plants around the outside of the city, which, of course, weren't bombed at all. But everybody lost their homes and their lives, and hundreds of thousands of civilians died. And if that were to happen in America, what would happen to the faith of the American people? I'm just hoping that maybe something we say now in preparation, preparing them for the difficult times that will lie ahead, will draw them closer to the Lord rather than separate them.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
anything
thank
else?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Oh, nope, God bless.
That's all. Thank you.
And please encourage others to listen to our program up there in Utica, New York.
I do. Thank you.
Good night. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Katie calling from Utica, New York, and certainly we be back in just a moment here to round up tonight's program. Open lines. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I really need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will, if you're able to, will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you'd like to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We've been talking about the coming police state. We've got a great new DVD. It's called The Planned Police State, and we recommend it to you. Admittedly, it's primarily me talking, but there are some other things in it that are quite interesting. The film footage from the Iran-Contra hearings, where Congressman Jack Brooks is trying to bring out the fact that there's a plan to suspend the Constitution and of course, put Americans into concentration camps. So let me suggest the DVD, The Planned Police State. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on concentration camps, and then, of course, we have a concentration camp special. You'll get information, you'll get government documents on the use of civilian internees by the military in the concentration camps, and then, of course, the four-tape set on concentration camps, and the DVD or video, I'm not sure which one, America Behind Barbed Wire, and then the amazing clips put up by our good friend David Wagner. And here, of course, David has done a magnificent job of putting together important information that will help you see what's going on and help you convince others that there really is a problem. The clips that he's been able to get from congressional hearings and elsewhere, that's called The Amazing Clips. And, of course, you can get the Concentration Camp Special from Radio Liberty if you're interested. And if you'd like to know the suggested gift, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Let me just mention, people in America really are totally unprepared for a disaster. We've got a great DVD. It's called Sheltering in Place. What would you do if there was a major chemical or biological or nuclear attack on America and you couldn't get out of your home? How could you what could you do to protect your family? Well, the DVD Sheltering in Place tells you what to do. And then, of course, we have a book put out many years ago by the Department of Civilian Defense when they wanted to try to protect the American people. They have no intention of protecting it today. They're protecting the elite. They're building shelters for them, but not for you. You need to get the book, Nuclear War Survival Skills. You need, of course, to have a supply of potassium iodate on hand so that you can drench your thyroid in iodine so you won't pick up the radioactive iodine. We have a great four-tape set on civilian defense, a four-tape, a four-CD set on civilian defense, my interviews with people who specialize in this. And then, of course, we have a book. It's called Making the Best of Basics. What do? You go to the grocery store, there's no food. They've cut off the electricity. They've cut off the gas. And you're going to have to go back to living in a very primitive way, and you may have a bag of wheat or something of the sort, but what do you do with it? How do you make it edible? Well, that's what Making the Best of Basics is, and believe me, it's a great book. And, you know, it just gives you all the things you need to know about how you would be able to survive and how your family would be able to survive if the unthinkable should happen. And ladies and gentlemen, if God is just, he's going to bring judgment on this country. And your job is to first prepare financially for what's ahead, but also spiritually for what's ahead, and then materially for what's ahead. And that's why we offer these items to Radio Liberty. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you don't believe that they are manipulating the weather throughout the world, you need to get our new four-tape or four-CD set, Weather Modification. You need to get our DVD on Weather Modification put out by our friend Bob Fletcher. You need, of course, to get the book on Weather Modification. And then, of course, you need to get our four-CD or four-tape set on RFID chips. We call it spy chips. We have a book on that as well. And then, of course, we have... Well, if you'd like a free catalog or free newsletter, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Brad Friedman, who is certainly on the front lines of the battle to keep the American people abreast of what's really going on as far as voting is concerned. And, of course, the voting machines, the electronic voting machines, are simply a means of stealing elections. In fact, don't you remember back there in the year 2000, when, of course, the election really hung in the balance in Florida between Al Gore and George Bush, and all you heard about was hanging chads on the election cards, hanging chads on the ballots. Oh my goodness, we got to get away from hanging chads. So what was the solution? You bring in electronic voting machines that can be rigged, and of course they can be rigged, they can be programmed, and you get the sort of results that they want. We all like to talk about the one precinct in Ohio where there was only 800 people registered, but 1,200 votes for George Bush. And when people said, well, I don't understand how you could have only 800 people in a precinct and 1,200 votes for George Bush, and the explanation was, well, the machine had a hiccup. And everybody said, oh, well, it just had a hiccup. Well, recently, of course, in New York, we've had something very similar. Barack Obama is black. And at least he has a black background, and of course you'd expect that many blacks would vote for him, and yet there were many precincts in New York in the recent elections there, and even in Harlem, where no votes for Obama. Every vote went for Hillary Clinton. Now, does that really make sense? I mean, do you honestly believe that none of the blacks voted for Obama, Barack Obama, and they all voted for Hillary Clinton? Brad Friedman, how did that happen? I just don't understand. Oh, we've got Brad here. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well.
I was just talking about, of course, there's amazing things in New York, where in the predominantly black precincts, none of the blacks voted for Obama. They all voted for Hillary. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it? It's, well, in truth, we don't really yet know how it happened, incredibly enough. We're trying to learn exactly what did happen, but information has been slow coming out. Now, I should mention that, yeah, there was some 80 precincts where Obama registered zero votes in the unofficial election night results from Super Tuesday. There was also a small handful, by the way, of precincts where Hillary received zero votes. Now, I should mention that the voting systems they use in New York City, believe it or not, are actually the old-style lever voting machines. They have not yet upgraded, and I put the word upgraded in quotes, they have not yet upgraded to the newer electronic voting systems, though the state has been in sort of a pitched battle over the past several months about exactly that, and we do have news on the type of systems they will be moving to from just the past day or two. But, yeah, so far we don't have an explanation for what exactly happened. We did get an interesting comment, however, from New York City Mayor Bloomberg, which I can share with you in a moment.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Brad Friedman. And Brad's, fortunately, on the front lines of this battle, and, of course, he has an excellent, excellent website. We go there on a regular basis, and of course, he always is on the cutting edge of what's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, they're stealing elections right and left. How are we going to maintain our freedom if they can rig the votes? I mean, certainly in other countries like Kenya, why, of course, the people are out there rioting. Here in America, nobody even knows they're stealing the elections. You go right ahead, Brad.
We had an interesting comment today reported in the New York Post by New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who said that he thought, I want to get this quote exactly right so I don't misstate him here. But he said, where are we here? If you want to call it significant undercounting, I guess that's a euphemism for fraud. Now, of course, Michael Bloomberg using the F word, as it were, certainly raised a few eyebrows in the media today. His belief that there could be fraud at work here was later confirmed by one of his spokespeople, who talked to another reporter over at Politico, and he reiterated the charge in an email. But what I found interesting was that the reporter over at Politico had asked the spokesperson, well, if there's fraud here, Bloomberg controls the New York City police, will there be an investigation? And oddly enough, the spokesman said that he didn't think there was, quote, actually a legal issue at stake in the preliminary unofficial vote counts. Strange comment that I'm trying to sort out. So in one sense, in one breath, they're saying that there was fraud in New York City, and then in the next breath, they're saying, I don't think there's anything that meets any legal definition here or legal issues at stake. So it's all very strange, and you know, I'll stress again, those were the preliminary numbers that came, and you're right, they came out of several precincts in Harlem, where it would certainly be beyond the pale to imagine that Barack Obama would receive zero votes at really any precinct. And so they have since changed those numbers upon doing their canvass, their official canvass. But no explanation so forth has come forward as far as I know as far as why you had all of these zero vote results right off the bat. Very strange indeed, and again underscores, you know, the need for transparency in this entire system. It's a rather complicated system, as I've been learning about the way they tally those votes in New York City. They look at these, you remember these great big lumbering lever voting machines?
Sure.
They actually go to the back of those machines. They check the numbers on election night. They holler them out to someone else who writes them down. Those numbers are then given to the Board of Election and to the police. Interestingly enough, the police then
hold that thought. Yeah. Brad, we'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brad was simply mentioning that there in New York, with the preliminary counting at the polls, many of those precincts that were predominantly black, almost all black, Barack Obama didn't get any votes at all. It's zero votes for Barack Obama, and of course, all the rest of them went for Hillary. Well, now, then, of course, he's talking about the fact that they used some sort of a levered voting machine there, great big old voting machines, a very primitive way of doing this, where people are yelling back and forth and they're keeping large votes by hand votes. And then, of course, pointing out that Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, had said that this certainly looked like fraud. But then, of course, nothing is going to be done about it. And yet, of course, this could very well sway what happens as far as the election in November, who the candidate's going to be. And, of course, if Hillary got a lot of votes fraudulently, why, of course, then she won New York, and that's an awful lot of delegates for the convention. So we've got to have honest elections. In other countries, they almost had a revolution in Mexico with the last election because the ruling party stole the election. The same thing happened recently, in Kenya, and the people were out demonstrating against it. Here in the United States, we've convinced the American people our elections are open and honest, and they are really not. But we've got to get the American people to demand we have legitimate elections, or we're going to lose this country. Well, Brad, certainly when the definitive votes came in, were they more in tune with the makeup, racial makeup of the precincts?
Well, they certainly seemed to make more sense. I mean, they were, by and large, I mean, they were all different numbers because we're talking about 80 different precincts, but you know, they were very close. Hillary still winning in some of those precincts. But, you know, they were within the realm of possibility. Now, the good news is, I'll mention, that because they do use these old lumbering lever machines, that you have sort of a, though they don't create a paper ballot, there is actually hard evidence for how each of these machines recorded the votes that day, and it would not be an easy task, if you will, though those old machines could be hacked, if you will. It would not be an easy task to go from machine to machine to machine across, you know, 80 precincts or more in New York City to try to change the vote. That's why, you know, though those systems do in fact need to be upgraded, they're not nearly as dangerous, in truth, as the computerized voting systems we have, where, you know, access to a single computer can in fact change the entire, you know, a race across an entire county or even an entire state by a single person. So, you know, we've got evidence that we can go back to figure out what the votes, what the machines actually say, in this case in New York City, because they do use these older machines. That's a good thing. But as I started to say, and as you summarized, they had a very complicated process where they call out the numbers and then report them to the police. The police then enter them into a computer, again, our friend the computer. They put them in the computer, share those numbers, interestingly enough, with the Associated Press, and that's how the numbers get out. Now, anywhere along the way, you can have a mistabulation. You can have someone reporting the wrong numbers as they're reading them off the back of the machine, someone writing down the wrong numbers, the police enter the wrong number into the database. There's all sorts of things that can go wrong along the way in that unofficial, that initial unofficial process that happens on election night. So, again, we don't know why. We don't know what happened there. The good news is we could see it happening, and hopefully something can be done about it, and we can get to the root of what exactly happened. Was this just an error? Was this something worse, malfeasance or fraud, as New York City Mayor Bloomberg suggested? But you make a great point, Dr. Stan, when you say that, you know, we're convinced we have clean elections in this country and that there could never be any such problem. Well, you've got Mayor Bloomberg here and his spokesperson both confirming, you know, using the F word, saying that it looks like there was fraud done here, and yet the spokesperson then goes on to say, you know, however, we don't think there's any legal issues at stake. We don't need to do an investigation, even though we, you know, control the police, the police force, and could do an investigation. So it's a sort of a, it's an odd position, but I think it's not one that's unlike what we see across America, where people suspect, well, I don't know, maybe there's foul play that could go on here, but overall, there's no fraud in American elections. Everything is just fine. It's very strange.
Well, I really think, of course, there was fraud in the 2000 elections there in Florida. I think there was fraud in Ohio in 2004. And it was because of those fraudulent elections that we are at war in the Middle East today, because they put George Bush into the presidency. So it's so vitally important we have fair and honest elections that reflect the attitude of the American people, or rather than the attitude of the elite who control both political parties. But let's get a little bit of what's happened in New Hampshire. You know, there was going to be a revote there. There was a lot of questions about some great irregularities. What have we found out about the recount in New Hampshire?
Well, we don't have, for the moment, I don't have any new information above what we talked about last time I was on, although I can add that the Republican candidate, Albert Howard, he was one of, there was about 40 little-known Republican candidates who ran on that in the New Hampshire primary. Albert Howard was one of them. He challenged the election and asked for a recount after he reportedly saw, on election night, while he was watching C-SPAN, he reportedly saw some more than 150 votes for him, which, you know, a small number, but he was pretty pleased to see that, and then disappointed and somewhat surprised when the official results came out, and it showed that he received only 44 votes. He became interested in this, and with the help of a lot of Ron Paul supporters, who had also had reason to be concerned about the election after a number of towns showed that Ron Paul I suppose echoing what happened up there in New York City, Ron Paul received zero votes in two different towns, which later on, once a few folks stepped forward and said, hey, wait a minute, I voted in this town and I voted for Ron Paul, they went back to the books, and what do you know, they found there were in fact votes for Ron Paul, and they chalk it up to human error. So Albert Howard has challenged the race. They counted on the Republican side. The data is still being analyzed, but we did, as the recount on the Democratic side showed, we saw miscounts in across almost all precincts, almost all candidates, verging on 1% or so. But we've got some odd numbers that I hope to report on coming up soon, where it shows that in a couple of towns on the Republican side, you actually had more votes than voters.
Well, that's, of course, what we saw in Ohio back in 2004. More right. votes than voters, and they were all voting for George Bush.
That's right. And, you know, you were, well, that's right, where there was that famous Fishes and Loaves precinct, as they call it now, Gahanna 1B, where the miracle of 435 voters having voted that day, George Bush having received more than 4,000 of them. But, you know, you mentioned Florida 2000. Going back there, we still have a situation where Al Gore in Volusia County received negative 16,022 votes on a Diebold tabulator down there in Volusia County, and that's actually what led to his initial concession on election night, which he then unconceded once the problem was discovered down there. But nobody has... Still, to this day, no one has adequately explained why a voting machine suddenly showed negative 16,022 votes. They chalked this up as glitch, you know, a glitch, a hiccup, a snafu, a snag. Well, computers don't really have hiccups, glitches, snafus, and snags. What they have is failures. And we saw that again today in a report that you can get the full details on at the top of Brad Blog, where we're watching New Jersey this afternoon. They also had an election on Super Tuesday, and now that they're going back and doing the official canvas of those machines, and yes, they use the touchscreen style voting machines in across the state in New Jersey, they're finding that the numbers reported by the internal paper reports at the end of the night do not match up with the numbers stored on the memory cards, the sensitive memory cards that have the ballot programming on them and the vote tabulation. They're finding this already across five different counties, at least in New Jersey. So far, no explanation for it. Sequoia Voting Machine Company calls it an anomaly, and I was happy to see one of the election director who originally discovered the problem said, you know, excuse me, this is not an anomaly. This is an error. This is a failure. And we need to start regarding these things as failures instead of, you know, glitches, hiccups, snafus, snags, and anomalies. This is a failure of oversight. This is a failure by the these private companies to essentially get away with doing whatever they want. So now we've got questions about the count in New Jersey on these touchscreen voting machines. Which I should add, back in where are we here? Well, on the morning of Election Day in New Jersey, the governor of New Jersey, John Corzine, showed up to vote in Hoboken, and was unable to cast his vote for 45 minutes because the voting machines wouldn't even start. That's the kind of system we're using, and those same machines were hacked a year earlier in New Jersey, and nobody ever did anything about it.
Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Brad Friedman here. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But if we're going to have a government where men can be free, we've got to have an honest voting system. And unfortunately, there are people who have a different agenda. They're really not concerned about an honest voting system. They want their people in office. This has happened through the years. It happened. That's how John Kennedy got to be the president. Of course, the mafia simply rigged the vote in Chicago. Well, Brad, you go right ahead there.
Yeah, well, interesting case with those voting machines in New Jersey where they're showing different, so far unexplained numbers, different numbers on the internal paper reports that are printed out by these computer voting machines. The numbers are different than those on the memory card that you insert into those voting machines. There's no real reason for that difference, and yet they're finding them. Well, I should say there's no legitimate reason for the differences in those numbers, and yet they're finding them all across New Jersey so far in at least five counties. This is just developing late this afternoon. We may have we may see more on this over the next few days. But in that same state, last February, 2007, a computer science professor at Princeton University found that he was able to go out on the internet and buy five of the exact same machines they use in New Jersey. They're called the Sequoia Advantage. And it's a great big, like a direct, what do they call them, direct recording electronic, DRE voting machine. They're usually known as touchscreens. He was able to go out and buy five of those machines online for $86 a piece. Mind you, the state of New Jersey just bought 10,000 of them for $8,000 a piece. He was able to get them for $86 a piece, took them back to the computer lab there at Princeton, and found that they could hack those machines in about 5 minutes' time. There was absolutely no testing, no oversight of those systems in New Jersey, despite the state law that requires that any voting systems be reliable and essentially fraud-proof. The voting machine company Sequoia, one of the worst in the country, I should add, although that's a pretty tough contest between some really bad companies, said that their machines were tamper-proof. Well, the Princeton professor a year ago proved quite differently, as he was able to easily tamper with them and try to let people know. And here we are a year later. The exact same machines are still being used in not just New Jersey, but across the entire country. You know, begging the question again, what the hell is it going to take to, you know, for people to pay attention and for, you know, someone to get in here, clean out our election system, and restore a transparent system that we the people can have oversight on, that we don't have to rely on trade secrets and computer scientists to look at this to look at these machines. We the people need to be able to go into an election, no matter what election it is. If you have a question about it, you should be able to go in there yourself, count the ballots on a piece of paper, and and find out for yourself that the election was held accurately and transparently and cleanly. And we're getting farther and farther away from that in this country. And as you know, Dr. Stan, I've been yelling and screaming about it for years. I'm just worried we're going to head into November and have yet another meltdown and a third election in a row, presidential election in a row, where people walk away wondering were the results correct or not, or have, as you said, has this election been stolen yet again? I don't think this country can take a third presidential election in a row like that, do you?
Well, of course, then the other thing, of course, is for the primary elections. Do we have any idea of, did the recounting of the votes there in New Jersey influence at all who won in either ticket? Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brad was simply talking about in New Jersey, where now they're going over the paper ballots, which are in the machine. I don't understand how it works, but then how this differs from the results were put out election day by the machines. Yep. They're finding entirely different. And so the question is, did they steal the election in New Jersey? Did Democrats steal the election? Which candidate stole the election? Or was it just a mistake, as we're told and all? Nobody stole the election. It was just a mistake, a hiccup. And then, of course, as far as the Republican candidates, do we know what really happened there on election day? Or did somebody manipulate the results so that the will of the people was not manifest? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, in fact, and just to correct one point there, they don't have paper ballots in New Jersey. What they have is electronic voting machines, similar to the ATMs, the touchscreen machines that you use when you go to get money. They do not give a paper receipt. The paper that I was referring to where there was a mismatch was, at the end of the night, these machines do, though they don't print out paper for the voters' ballots, they do print out internally sort of a report on paper at the end of the night saying, you know, how many people voted, who they voted for, and so forth. So you've got that paper printout. It's 100% faith-based voting. You've just got to presume that whatever the machine tells you is the truth. But the problem is the machine also stores vote tallies on a removable memory cartridge, the type of cartridge you might use on your computer, a card, a PCMCIA card you slip in and out and so forth. So it records both on the internal memory, which is printed out at the end of the night, and it records on the removable cartridge. And now that they're doing the canvass in New Jersey, they're finding that those numbers on the same machines don't match up. So who knows what happened? I mean, you know, who knows if someone was trying to game the system? Who knows if it was a programming error? Who knows which of those two numbers, the numbers on the printed piece of paper at the end of the night or the numbers on the removable memory cartridge in that same machine, who knows which one is the accurate one?
Well, you know, Brad, there is a conscious effort to confuse the American people by saying, oh, we're just so incompetent. Oh, these machines, any machine can fail.
And it's working, isn't it?
There might be, some irregularity, but we would never intentionally rig an election. And I would say, why not? We got crooked people. Man, I believe, is basically inherently evil. And of course, when they've got this amount of money and power at stake, of course people are going to try to rig the elections. How could we get the elections transparent so we can be sure that wicked people cannot take advantage of the system? That's the question I think you're asking. That's the question we should all ask, and that's why I appreciate so much what you're doing. It's keeping on touch of it, on top of this, so we can come to you and find out what's really happening as far as voter fraud across America.
You know, I'm going to correct you as far as election fraud across America.
Election fraud. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Well, because, you know, the voters are doing fine. And to their credit, you know, they're turning out in record numbers this year. And, you know, that's good to see. They're hoping to exercise their democracy. But when they get to the polls, they're met with problems. They're met with, they're being told that they're not registered or they're not registered into the right party. And, well, why is that? Why is there suddenly in New Mexico, also on Super Tuesday, New Mexico, they just released the results of the New Mexico election the day before yesterday. Why? Well, there was a 200-vote margin in that race, and yet you had long lines, and you had some 17,000 provisional ballots because people were showing up to the polls and they were being told that they weren't registered as a Democrat. How did that happen? This is the Democratic caucus. How did that happen? Well, the registration rolls have also been outsourced, privatized, and run by the voting machine company. So where you had a 4% provisional number, a 4% number of provisional ballots in the last caucus, they've since privatized the voting rolls, and now they've got an 11% provisional ballot rate. What the hell is going on? Well, it's the private companies. The private companies who don't have the kind of oversight that public officials would have to. And that's the same problem that we're seeing with the voting machines themselves. They're being jobbed out to private companies who have absolutely no responsibility to show their source code, to show the way that they're recording elections. Apparently, that's none of our business. So they get to do whatever they want, and we just have to take it.
And of course, we're told, well, that's trade secrets, you know. We certainly can't infringe on their rights. Well, they're infringing on the rights of the American people to have a fair election. And ladies and gentlemen, this is going to continue until the American people are going to get mad and say, we're not going to put up with this. They've stolen election after election. And of course, look where we are today because of it. And I'm just hoping that what Brad is doing and what we're doing and what others are doing is going to get the American people to realize that we're not getting fair elections. And without fair elections, we cannot survive as a free nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. We've got Jack calling in from Michigan. Jack, do you have a question for our guest?
Dr. Stan. In light of what Brad has just revealed, wondering if it wouldn't be a great idea for people such as myself who are motivated to use the data from his website to organize a grassroots review board to monitor the election event so that there can be pressure brought upon. So I just wanted to review that on
his website. Let's go ahead and get Brad's response to that. What do you think about that,
Brad? Yeah, no, that must be done, and in fact that is being done all around the country. I would point you to an organization that I helped form, velvetrevolution.us. If you go to our Election Strikeforce webpage, there's a lot of tools. We're still bringing a lot of them together, but there's tools, velvetrevolution.us/election strikeforce. And there's tools for local groups who are, in fact, organizing around the country, who are trying to bring transparency. You have to do it. And you have to do it in your it's actually, though it's exhausting sometimes, it's actually easy to do on the local level because you have access to your local election administrator and your local county election board. You're entitled to watch the counting of the elections on election night. You have to do that. You have to work as poll workers so you can monitor what goes on at the polls. You know, this is it's supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, but I think that we, the people, have become pretty damn complacent over the past, several decades, and we just presume that the magical election fairy comes down and delivers the election results every 4 years, and that's that. No, if you really want to take your government back, then the way to do it is stepping in at the local level, and you can make a difference. You can talk to your board of elections, your election supervisors. You can make public records requests to find out how they're making their decisions for the voting machines that they're using. Every improvement that I have seen made around the country, and there are a lot of them, though tonight we're talking about a lot of the bad stuff that's going on, there are a lot of good things going on in a lot of different states, and almost all of them came about because one guy, one woman, brought a video camera to their election board, brought a video camera when they went to vote, made a public records request.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Brad Friedman. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sydney. Jack was calling from Flint, Michigan, and Jack had asked if, you know, what people could do locally, maybe set up some sort of a group. And of course, Brad talks about this. He's working to put together a group, call on the Velvet Revolution, sort of a takeoff on some of the things happening over in Russia and all the things that can be done locally. And what's that website again that people should be going to?
velvetrevolution.us/election strikeforce.
One more time.
velvetrevolution.us/election strikeforce. If you just go to velvetrevolution.us, you'll be able to see a link over to the Strikeforce site. But it's a great place to get involved. Don't wait for me to organize. You need to organize by yourself, and there are a lot of tools out there to do it. You can find out a lot of them at Velvet Revolution, at bradblog.com. A very simple step, by the way, I'd recommend. I think I mentioned this the last time I was on the show, Dr. Stan. A new documentary film, Uncounted. It's incredible. Uncounted, The New Math of American Elections. It's just been released. It's been screening all over the country. You can get your own copy at uncountedthemovie.com.
All right, fine. Can we actually buy them there?
You can buy them there. You can watch a trailer there. I'll warn you that though I am in it, you should watch it anyway. And it'll really give you an idea of what's going on across the country and how you can organize, participate. You'll see some of those folks I was talking about who have made a difference. You'll see a whole bunch of them in this movie, and it is some extraordinary stories as well as some extraordinary help and tools for how you can make a difference in your own hometown.
And what about getting your regular blog site out there? How can people get to that? It's, go ahead.
Very easy. You type in Brad Blog, B-R-A-D, blog, B-L-O-G, .com, bradblog.com. We report on this stuff, as you know, Dr. Stan, too frequently, several times a day. Matter of fact, I got a story that I was just about to break before I had to come on the air tonight, so I'll leave you with that teaser. Folks can check out bradblog.com after we get off the air for that story. But just before I came on the air as well, new word out of Ohio on an election official who has been fired by the Secretary of State out there. Turns out he's the 30-year head of the Republican Party in Summit County. He also happens to head the Summit County Board of Elections. And apparently he was running the local GOP machine right out of the election office, and he was fired by the today by the Democratic Secretary of State. But this guy was apparently so bad that even a Republican state senator out there applauded her removing this guy, who apparently said that he abused power. He abused the office, and he even abused employees, reportedly, according to the Republican state senator, up there in that election office where the guy has gone unchallenged for 30 years as the machine boss head of the Summit County, Ohio election, Summit County, Ohio Republican Party. Mind you, they've got their primary now coming up on March 4th. And I'm exhausted already thinking about it, because this could, once again, Ohio could be the place that decides, at least on the in this big Democratic primary, could be the one who decides if it's going to be Clinton or Barack Obama who receives the nomination. And Ohio itself is going through an incredible upheaval as the new Democratic Secretary of State is trying to clean out the system. Has found she commissioned a major study of all of the electronic voting machines used in the state, and found to well, certainly not my surprise, that every single one of them could be hacked by simply simple tools as simple as a magnet or a palm-held device, a personal digital assistant device. You could use those to hack the voting machines in Ohio. So,
okay, well, let's see. Jack, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
Yeah, sorry, Jack. I went on and on there.
Dr. Stan, yes, real quick, with your permission, I just wanted to invite the audience. There's a syndicated talk called Phil Valentine, who's on every afternoon 3 to 6, and I'd like to see people call his program, it's a toll-free, to motivate the host to have Brad Freeman on his program. He has interviewed that one judge who authored the book Nation of Sheeple on a couple times. So I'd like to give out that toll-free number, Dr. Stan, to your audience.
Okay, go ahead.
800-618-7445. That's 800-618-7445, and it's 3 to 6 every afternoon. We want to get...
That's, of course, that's in the Michigan area. That's Eastern time.
Yes, Eastern time. Thank
God bless. Thanks very much. And, of course, our number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, 464-8295, here in the Central Coast of California. Our guest is Brad Freedman. And Jack, Brad is on the front lines of this effort to determine, you know, what's really going on across the country, and at least to let the American people know that a lot of this is fraudulent. The electronic voting machines certainly have been a disaster. It's very easy to reprogram them and steal elections. Now, what's happened in California? We certainly had a Democratic Secretary of State voted in, of course, the Republican Secretary of State. Bruce McPherson was all in favor of the electronic voting machines, and of course he was not going to hear anything different. But the Democrat won, I think, primarily because she said she was going to check those voting machines. So what happened?
Yeah, she did, and she won in a year when
she was the only Democrat to win who was running on the across the state on the state ticket. And you're right, it was because she had promised to clean out this these electronic voting systems. She came in, she commissioned a major study, the first one of its type, the first really independent study of these electronic voting systems, and she commissioned the University of California to oversee the review. They brought in world-class computer scientists and security experts, and once again, they found, what do you know, every single machine could be hacked within 60 seconds' time. The folks, this is the first time, believe it or not, this is the first time that hack tests were actually done on these machines. You know, in the private world, when it comes to the ATMs and other, you know, mission-critical computer systems like that, hack tests, or red teaming, as they call them, are standard. You know, you wouldn't put out an ATM without making sure that it was bulletproof, essentially. And yet, the voting machines, somehow or another, the voting machine companies were able to get away with, you know, disallowing any kind of tests along these lines. Bruce McPherson, you mentioned, the former Secretary of State here, wasn't interested in any kind of testing like that. And Bowen came in, she said, look, if you guys want to continue doing business in California, which is the largest voting market in the world, as Diebold likes to call it, then you're going to have to turn over your source code, you're going to have to turn over your machines, you're going to have to let us test them. And in fact, they found that every one of them was vulnerable, could be hacked in 60 seconds, and she ended up decertifying a whole bunch of mostly touchscreen voting systems across the state. By and large, now the state is using paper ballots that are scanned through an optical scan machine, similar to an SAT test where you sort of fill in the bubble. Problem is, those machines as well can be hacked, can be tampered with, are prone to error. But the good side of it is, you've got a paper ballot that has been marked by the voter, that we can look at it, we can know that it reflects the voter intent. So if there are problems that emerge with the voting machines, you can always go and count those paper ballots. And that's exactly, by the way, what happened down here in Los Angeles, where they're still struggling to count some 100,000 ballots from the Super Tuesday primary that were not counted by the machine because of a ridiculous procedure put in place down here. I happen to be in Los Angeles County, put in place by the former L.A. County Registrar of Voters, Connie McCormick. She quit just prior to Election Day, but we got stuck with her ridiculous system that left some 100,000 votes in the Democratic primary uncountable for the moment, uncountable by the machine, and the registrar of voters, the acting registrar who took her place, is saying that we may not be able to determine the intent of the voters on those paper ballots. That registrar is wrong. The ballots need to be counted. And late last week, I was happy to report that Secretary of State Deborah Bowen seems to be riding into the rescue here, took some of the reports that we filed at BradBlog and sent a letter to the county registrar down here and said, yes, you need to count those ballots. Here's exactly how you can do it. It's easily done, and I want you to get it taken care of. That's where it was sort of left last with Deborah Bowen in this L.A. County debacle. I have yet to hear what the response is from the Registrar of Voters, but we're still fighting to get those 100,000 votes counted prior to the certification date, which I think is March 4th or March 5th down here on the local level.
No, could it change the outcome of the election at all?
Well, it certainly could change the outcome of elections, of the election. Most notably, what it could change is, you know, I'm sure you're following this race between Clinton and Obama. It's deadly close right now. It's going to come down to the number of delegates each of them have at the convention. And, indeed, it could certainly change the number of delegates, because remember, the Democrats in most of the states, unlike the Republicans, the Democrats actually award the delegates on a proportional basis. So if, Clinton receives 60% and Obama receives 40%,
then Clinton will receive 60% of the delegates. If that number changes, even if, you know, Clinton still wins, if she ends up winning 55-45, it can still, you know, radically change the number of delegates. And if you're following this interesting story this year, it looks like it's going to come down to potentially to every last delegate.
Well, of course, then, of course, for the Democrats, they have something called the superdelegates, about 400 of those, my understanding. And so they are party bosses, probably beholden to the Clintons. So even though Obama might get the majority of the votes, if the super delegates go for Hillary, it doesn't really matter what the people want. The Democrat Party, the elite who run the Democrat Party, will pick the nominee. This is really what's so disturbing, and I think that really everybody should understand that although we're supposed to have a representative or democratic process, we really don't now when you have all those super delegates. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting to watch because I think that a lot of those superdelegates are hearing, you know, a lot of people have been making quite a bit of noise about this and saying, you know, look, if you go into this convention and you've got, let's say, Barack Obama leading in elected delegates or even leading in the popular vote and the superdelegates come in there and change the will of the people, boy, I mean, I think you're going to see an uproar that is going to make the Florida 2000 election look like a picnic. So what I'm starting to hear from some of these superdelegates, and I've spoken to a couple of them, I think they're starting to get the message, and I think they're starting to say, look, we need to go with what the people want at the end of this process rather than coming in and subverting it. So I was going to say I'm confident that that's what they'll do. I should know better to be confident of anything like that. I perhaps what I meant is I'm hopeful that's what they will do.
Well, I'm hopeful that's what they'll do, too, and I have no real strong feelings one way or the other between Obama and Clinton, but I think that the process should be representative. If we're ever going to take America back, we've got to start someplace, and this is a good place to do it and get rid of those superdelegates with the Democratic Party. And as far as the Republicans are concerned, this idea of winner take all, even if you've only got a half dozen vote majority in the state, get all the delegates, that's simply stupid. You ought to have representative assignment, or you ought to have certainly the assignment of delegates proportional to the number of votes forgotten.
Well, yeah, I think so too. And but that's they get to choose the way they that particular party wants to choose their nominee. The same is true for the Democrats. The problem is that though these parties are essentially they're private parties in a sense. The Democratic Party can do whatever they want. The Republican Party can do whatever they want in order to choose their own nominee. Problem is, they've made such a two-party duopoly out of the system that, should a third party want to come in, should an independent want to come in, the two parties control the system in such a way that really it's impossible, next to impossible, if not impossible, for any other voice to get in. So it raises the question, how private are these parties? How much of a right do they have to choose their nominee on their own if they are the only game in town? And I'd sure love to see that change. I really would. I don't know that it's going to happen anytime soon, but they really are gaming the system, both of them. And you see this every 4 years when it comes to these elections where they, along with the media who really enables them to do this, simply declare, well, anybody who has less than 5% in the national polls or less than 10% in the national polls is not welcome to be in the debates. Well, if they were in the debates, they might have more than 5 or 10% in the polls. So it's really meant to keep the little guy out, keep the independents out, and they're succeeding at it. And they do it with both of the parties really do it. You see them doing it with, the way they marginalized Ron Paul, kept him out of some of the debates on the Republican side, kept Dennis Kucinich out of the debates on the Democratic side. I don't think it's what the Founding Fathers had in mind.
I'm sure that it isn't. I think that what we're dealing with is power politics. Yeah. And, of course, I was very much involved with the Republican Party here in California until, of course, they spent $50,000 to $100,000 to take over our little central committee, and really millions of dollars to take over central committees all across the state. And a group of very powerful and wealthy people, who in my estimation were rhinos, that means Republicans in name only, took over the Republican Party, and of course their programs are very, very similar to the Democrats, except of course the Republicans are supposedly against higher taxes, but that's about the only difference between the two of them, and a lot of this is contrived as well, after all. So the Republicans have given us the highest tax increase in all history under Ronald Reagan in 1986. Nobody ever wants to talk about that. Everybody talks about how the Republicans want a balanced budget, and yet, of course, look what George Bush has done. Look what Ronald Reagan done. They talk about the deficits, and yet the Republicans have given us the biggest deficits. Well, what about the Supreme Court? We've got to keep the Republicans in there. 7 of the 9 Supreme Court justices were nominated by Republican presidents. Maybe if we kept the Republicans in, they'd all be by Republican presidents, and the same things that continue going on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got 3 minutes for Brad to wrap up this evening's program. What message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight,
well,
Brad?
You know, Jack, the caller earlier, Jack, made a great point when he was talking about calling. He mentioned a radio show calling to make noise with them, suggesting that I come on that show. That's fine. But more importantly, I think that people listening to this need to make noise, whether that means calling into radio shows, writing letters to the editor, getting out there and making public requests with your election officials, asking questions. People must make noise. This really is, it's up to the people, and I've mentioned that to you every time I'm on. It's really true. The people do make a difference, and making noise makes a difference. The Los Angeles Times down here in L.A. has been one of the worst papers in the country. Contact them. Write them letters. Demand that they cover these issues. Make noise. And, of course, educate yourself. I recommend bradblog.com for that, of course. And if you want to participate in the movement around the country to change this system, stop by velvetrevolution.us. Sign up. Log in, poke around there, a lot of good information. All the information, all the tools that you need are out there, but you have to go get them because the corporate mainstream media is not going to deliver them to you, and the elected officials and the election officials are not going to take action until you make them do so.
Do we have any sort of good book on this subject that you can think of?
Good book?
Right.
Actually, there are a few of them. Let me toss in the easier route, the documentary Uncounted,
right.
UncountedTheMovie.com. There's a couple of other good books out there. Where are we here? I don't have the titles off the tip of my fingers, but Bob Petrakis at the Columbus Free Press wrote a number of books about what happened in 2004. There's another book, I believe it's called Hacked, by a couple of women down in Texas that is great on this. Mark Crispin Miller's Fooled Again. And he's got a new book coming out, actually, called Loser Take All, a collection of essays and investigative reports from a bunch of different folks. I will have a never-before-published investigative report in that book, Loser Take All, by Mark Crispin Miller. So, yeah, the information is out there. You got to go get it, learn it, and share it.
Well, we will try to get those books, carry them here so we can get the information out. Thanks so much, Brad. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope that you enjoyed our program this evening. I always enjoy having Brad on, and he keeps us on the cutting edge of what's happening in the electoral field. And, of course, we're hoping to put together a 4-tape set to get some videos. We do have a video, of D.V. Kidd talking about when she ran for election here in California, how they rigged the election, and we're going to. But please don't call in and request that video yet. We're going to have to get that supply of those in and make them available. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener supported. We have almost 60 outlets across America every single week, and of course it's an expensive thing to do that. We quite frankly need your help to maintain what we have, and if you're out there across America and you're in a position to help us, we hope that many of you will give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, your job is to tell other people about our programs, because that's how we're building up a massive listening audience across the nation, and the listening audience is increasing. And, of course, in those areas where we have a strong footprint, in Washington, D.C., even in Santa Cruz, where I live, I am firmly convinced, influenced the last election. And, of course, why? Well, because I think that we're able to reach people in getting them to think. We don't tell you who to vote for. Well, we try to get you to think and analyze what's going on and understand the power structure that controls things and the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. If you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. Or you can get the DVD. And if you can't afford to, if you have a computer, you can go up at RadioLiberty.com and you can just click onto the DVDs and you can watch the program there. My talk for absolutely nothing, as well as many of the other talks we've given. They're available at our website at RadioLiberty.com. Of course, you can also listen to our programs live, archived, MP3. You can listen to our material that we put up on the net. We have a constant 24-hour feed to a satellite, and of course that's available at the same website. You can pull down our newsletters, and we recommend those very strongly. And of course we have some pamphlets we put together from the newsletters. We have one called A True Story of 9-1-1. Do you know what really happened on 9-1-1 and why it happened? Well, the four or five newsletters here are important. And then, of course, we have a three pamphlet set, Foreknowledge, 9-1-1. We have a pamphlet called We Are a Republic, the things you need to know to discuss why we are a republic and not a democracy. We have the history of money. We have one on genetic engineering. We have certainly the occult hierarchy, a three pamphlet set. And all of this information is so vitally important. We have a new pamphlet called The Financial Meltdown. That's the financial meltdown. It will explain to you what's happening financially. We have another one called The History of Money. These are all pamphlets made up of our newsletters, and I like to keep them close at hand so I can reference the material that we have there. And they're all available. If you'd like more information for the suggested gift for them, our number is 1-800-544-8927. You need, of course, to consider the four tape or four CD set on weather modification. You notice how strange the weather is, and we're having tornadoes in the middle of winter, and of course, over in Australia, they've lost 90% of their rice crop and most of their wheat crop, and the world is facing famine. And did you know they know how to modify the weather? We have a four CD or four tape set on weather modification. We have a DVD by our good friend Bob Fletcher on weather modification. We have a book on weather modification, another book on HAARP, the ultimate weapon, and a four-tape or four-CD set on HAARP. Information you need to get. We have, of course, a four-tape set on RFID chips. And, of course, we have our great new DVD, The Planned Police State. That's The Planned Police State. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We also have the material on concentration camps. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.